Moving into our presentation from Debbie Greiner. Debbie Greiner serves as an environmental resources project supervisor in Miami-Dade County, Florida, in their air quality management division. Ms. Greiner was a core team member in the development of the county's community-wide sustainability plan and continues to facilitate its implementation. She provides staff support to the steering committee of the Southeast Florida Regional Climate Compact, which is a groundbreaking regional collaboration of four southeastern Florida counties on climate change issues, policies, and strategies for the Southeast Florida region. Ms. Greiner facilitated the transportation work group tasked with developing actionable recommendations for the Regional Climate Action Plan. Her responsibilities include facilitating implementation of county internal and community-wide climate change mitigation and adaptation initiatives and aligning them with regional, state, and federal resources and priorities. Ms. Greiner earned a Bachelor of Science degree in Environmental Studies with a minor in Biology in 1996 from Florida International University. Thank you for joining us, Debbie. I'll turn it over to you.
Great. Thanks so much. I've already learned so much from the previous speakers. I'm making notes to follow up with them, actually. And thanks for inviting me to share today our experiences in South Florida. The counties of Palm Beach, Broward, Miami-Dade, and Monroe, as you can see, have diverse landscapes, and their demographics and their culture vary as well. However, you know, we're all low-lying coastal communities, and so therefore we share many similar concerns. And as Ann mentioned earlier, we are one of those areas that are certainly experiencing the stress of aging infrastructure and increasing populations in the light of climate change. So, in fact, our region is expected to grow by 20% by 2035. And the counties are experiencing climate change in many of the same ways. In the past 5 years, temperatures are increasing, and yet we've also had some of the coldest weather on record, which you can see the folks in their winter coats on the beach on the left-hand corner. And as many know, our area is subject to hurricanes like Isaac that came through in 2012 and provided a great deal of flooding in Palm Beach County. And basically, we're experiencing wetter wets and drier dry periods. And, of course, sea level rise is impacting our beaches and threatening our drinking water supplies because that salt-freshwater interface that is underground, it's moving further inland towards our drinking well fields. This slide shows you how South Florida has been experiencing really unprecedented coastal flooding from seasonal extreme high tides and provides a window into our future. You know, local residents will tell you that things have gotten worse that have lived there a very long time. And this is because you can see on the right the high tide, instead of the water coming down through the storm drain system, the high tide water goes through that system. It serves as a conduit and then actually floods streets with salt water, and these streets are a few blocks off of the actual coast. And so when we have rainfall, in addition to these tidal experiences, the flooding, of course, gets worse. Some communities have installed backflow preventers to help, and others active pumps that actively push out the water against the tide. And this is in the city of Miami Beach, who has actually developed a $200 million stormwater master plan to start addressing these infrastructure issues. For the last several years, staff from the compact counties have gone out to capture images of these events. And, you know, they help us to gauge impacts, but they also provide an opportunity to raise awareness, which was a point also made by other presenters earlier. And what strikes me about this the photo in the middle is that the tidal inundation is so common at one of our parks that we've installed a permanent warning sign. It says, "Road under salt water, proceed at your own risk." And at the bottom is a photo of Fort Lauderdale, a portion of A1A that was basically washed into the ocean due to Hurricane Sandy. So before the compact, this slide illustrates all the partners in the region who develop projections, and you can see they're all over the place in terms of extent and timing of impacts. So in the spring of 2009, you know, representatives from the different counties and cities were walking the halls of Congress with these varying projections, asking for climate policy, and it became very evident that we needed to sort of get together. And so that spurred, in the fall of 2009, what would be the first of four annual summits. And at this summit, the counties decided to adopt a formal compact resolution, which was adopted by all four counties by 2010, and it really defines our work. It says we'll work together on developing policies at the state and federal level and develop technical tools that will inform climate action plan development, and that we will meet once a year to mark progress and redirect our efforts. So the compact structure, really in the middle you see the compact steering committee, which is made up of two representatives from each of the counties and one municipal representative. What I don't have here is the Nature Conservancy and the Water Management District, who are critical partners, contributors to our staff steering committee meetings. Steve Adams of the Institute for Sustainable Communities provides administrative and facilitative support. He basically keeps us cats herded, and you know, his knowledge of what's going on nationally in the area of climate change has been extremely valuable. So that group breaks off into these other work groups depending on what needs to be done. But the work I'll talk about mostly today is the technical work group. The steering committee recently added a liaison, one of its staff support members, to liaise between the academic institutions, recognizing how critical their input is to our work. And that's performed by Dr. Nancy Gassman of Broward County, who actually led many of our technical work products. In fact, I have to thank her for the majority of my slides today. So the compact brought together our local sea level rise experts into a work group. It included folks who served on individual county climate change task forces, climate scientists from universities, Army Corps of Engineers, NOAA, and the Water Management District. They based the projection on the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers guidance document. And on the left, that blue line you see is actual tidal data from 1913 to 1999. That was the foundation of the calculation. That showed that we had an 8 to 10-inch sea level rise over the last 100 years. And in the trend, as you can see, we would expect 5 inches by mid-century. However, you know, our projection is 3 to 7 inches of sea level rise from today's levels by 2030 and up to 2 feet. Actually, in the next 50 years. Please note that there's not a range beyond 2060 because our folks felt that the uncertainty was just too great to provide that projection at this time. So as we do this work, it's important that we understand that projections are, you know, educated estimates of the best information that we have. And, you know, the uncertainty is not that we will experience impacts, because clearly we already are. The uncertainty is in the precision of those impacts. And having a unified projection gives us guidance to begin our planning now. And we have committed to review and update the projections every 4 years with the newest and greatest and latest science. But believe it or not, the science advancement does not adhere to our four-year review process. In fact, you know, as many of you know, the National Climate Assessment technical document was released in 2012 and may actually provide for higher projections than our current compact projection. And our region was a recipient of a U.S. HUD Sustainable Communities Planning Grant, and they're doing sea level rise mapping right now. So we had to, you know, re-engage our work group and pose the question of whether our 2-foot scenario was reasonable for the 2060 period, and came to a consensus that yes, it is. And the recommendations are to create a companion document explaining what the latest science is, but however, not to fully review our projection until the 2014 IPCC document comes out, and also an expected update on the guidance from the Army Corps of Engineers. So the benefit of this process is really that we don't get stuck. We can keep moving forward. We also provided a vulnerability analysis of our key infrastructure. And you can see here, and this is based on LIDAR data, at a 3-foot sea level rise, over 80% of the schools in the Florida Keys are expected to be impacted in some way, and also 10% of hospitals and 30% of the region's airports. And we hope to do a deeper dive into some of our transportation infrastructure through a grant we were recently awarded, the Broward MPO, on behalf of the regional MPOs in the region, from the Federal Highway Administration. So the partners and expertise can't, you know, the importance of that really can't be overstated. We had some existing partnerships with the USGS on groundwater modeling and work on the comprehensive Everglades restoration plan from the Army Corps. But, you know, they continue to increase their resources to our region. And NOAA Coastal Services, of course, has come down and provided training and tools in local universities. The Florida Department of Economic Opportunity is partnering with Broward County and Fort Lauderdale on a pilot project to further identify vulnerable areas and start to identify, you know, really focus in on what we call adaptation action areas. Finally, the Institute of Sustainable Communities and the Kresge Foundation are there from the very beginning, providing critical support to the compact, and recently awarded us, Kresge Foundation awarded a $975,000 grant to help us with the implementation of the action plan. The action plan, the objective really is to integrate it into existing systems and through existing organizations. And you can see the categories listed there, what you would expect to see, over 100 recommendations. And it provides a regional framework for each of the individual governments to move forward, you know, as their priorities allow, but while working in a regional framework. Here's an example of, on the left is a storm surge map. So this is to show you that some of our counties are integrating climate change into their local mitigation strategies and land use plans. We're doing beach tree nourishment. On the bottom, you can see that red line is the salt freshwater interface moving inland towards our groundwater wells, which are depicted in the circles. So we're putting in place for that both green or natural system solutions like wetlands and also engineering solutions. And because this series of at EPA is trying to identify the synergies between mitigation and adaptation, I thought I would talk about transit-oriented parks. We really consider it a twofer, if you will. You know, they are planned along existing Miami-Dade Metro Rail, Elevated Metro Rail, which is the green line in the left map. And this not only attracts, obviously, compact development in these urban areas, which will help with reducing vehicle miles traveled and emissions, but it also provides green infrastructure in this urban environment and can assist with the stormwater management and also with cooling. And this diagram shows you how we're working it at every scale of government, the smaller circle being at the city level. Again, we have city representation on our compact. And then at the county level, we have our own climate action plan and our land use plans. And again, the 4-county climate compact. And this is actually feeding into the 2 regional planning councils in our region is looking at a 50-year 7-county prosperity plan through that U.S. HUD Sustainable Communities Development. And the work of the compact is really informing that process in terms of the resiliency element. So in conclusion, I just want to say that, you know, clearly we're experiencing climate impacts now, and action really does take leadership at all levels. And engaging your local science experts is is very critical. And local and regional planning can address risks and reduce future vulnerability. And again, working at every level, government is key. And there's someone from Miami Beach who has clearly adapted his way of riding a bike. And perhaps in a couple of years when we go back to take pictures, we'll catch him in a kayak. But that concludes my presentation, and I want to thank you again for having me here.
Thank you for your presentation, Debbie. Southeastern Florida is certainly a region of the country that is seeing a lot of impacts currently from climate change, and your presentation highlighted, I think, a lot of the challenges many of our participants may be experiencing with trying to understand how to use the data that they have available. And I think your example of how you're planning to revisit sea level rise scenarios on a regular basis within the compact is a great example for folks to be aware of. So with that, we're going to move into our last poll question for the audience. And after listening to all of today's speakers, which approach would your organization or community be most likely to employ? And if folks could take just a second to answer that for us, we'd appreciate it. Okay, if we could pull up our results. It looks like 42% are interested in using the threshold approach, 31% in looking at downscale data, 15% using historical data, about 8% need more certainty to pursue any actions, and about 4% are interested in looking at alternative approaches. So thank you for sharing that feedback with us. I hope our presentations today have provided you with some good ideas and examples of things to pursue in your community.